Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's really wonderful to have you company for another episode of the show. One of the things that I've been passionate about for as long as I can remember is creating a life by design. And to be able to create a life by design, we want to create a business by design. We want to have a business that serves our needs in every possible way. Now, my guest today is Kate Christie, and Kate was on our podcast way back in episode 32 in 2016. And in that episode, we spoke about time management because Kate is an expert in that field. And in this episode, I was really curious to ask her about creating a life by design and intentionality around that, because a lot has changed in the last 8 years. 8 years ago in 2016, the hustle culture was really prominent and everyone was kind of busy, busy, busy. Of course, since then we've had a pandemic, we've got the post-COVID hangover, as some people are calling it, and we want to be able to think about how we not just manage our time, but how we manage our energy, how we do deep and meaningful work that gives us joy and happiness, and of course, how to create an experiential life where we're doing the things that we love outside of work as well. And so Kate references her book, The Life List, which I think is a terrific read that everyone should grab a copy and absorb and put into practice. And we talk about a bunch of things that are really useful to figure out what's important to you in any given season of your life. So this is a really interesting conversation. I hope you find it very helpful. Please, as always, have a pen and paper handy because there's some great questions that Kate puts to us, and I'm going to assure you that you're going to want to take those questions, think about the answers, and make some changes to your life so that you're living your life by design. But without any further ado, here's Kate Christie. Good morning, Kate. How are you? Welcome back to Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have you back.
It's lovely to be here, Jesse.
Well, we spoke to you back in 2016. It was episode 32. And we spoke about time management, and we were speaking at a time long before this weird, wonderful event called COVID occurred, and now we're speaking to you a few years post-COVID. So what's changed? What's happening in your world of time management and talking to business owners and being at the coalface with people? What are you seeing? What are you noticing? And how's it all changed?
It's a great question. Look, it's changed quite significantly. I think that 2016 feels like decades ago,
it doesn't does. It? It does. Well, it almost is, really.
Yeah, it is. I think the major change I'm seeing is this groundswell that small business owners want to live very differently and they want to do time very differently, and they're looking at productivity through a very different lens. Back when I spoke to you in 2016, it was probably a focus on strategies around how to get the most of your time so that you can put it back into the business and grow the business and let's scale, and everyone had so much more energy. And what I'm seeing now is this general fatigue with small business owners. I think when we talked previously, you were talking about it as a bit of a malaise, and I'm seeing that across every industry. Small business is hard work. I would never say to anybody, "Oh yeah, start a small business. You know, it's so easy, it's so great." You know, absolutely, if it's your passion and you're really good at it and you want to, then. But I look at it now, I guess, with hindsight, and small business is really, really hard. COVID made it a lot harder. Everyone's tired. I guess on the flip side of that is that everyone's looking to live life very, very differently. So I'm seeing a lot of my clients now wanting strategies that help them maximize their time investment in the business, but also their time investment outside the business. There's less of a all business focus these days and more of a how do I create an overarching life by design that includes my business but allows me to live life a little bit differently.
I think that's actually something we've noticed as well. We've spoken to lots of practice owners over the years, past few years in particular, and the whole idea of life by design is certainly top of mind for lots of people. And to do that, of course, you need to make sure that your business is operating in a particular manner so that you can do that and you're not consumed by the business. And I think setting your business up in a particular way will allow you to do that. You're quite right. Back in the day, it seems like, as you say, a decade or so ago, it was, you know, the all-in, you know, peddling hard, hustle, 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 hustle. And that whole hustle culture was really popular back at the time. And now I think people have kind of gone, maybe not. So can we talk a little bit about maximizing the time investment in the business that you just spoke about? Because I think that's a really important thing. Where does that fit into the puzzle?
Yeah, so I think that we need to stop looking at time through the lens of time management. Time is something that needs to be managed. We just can't. We can't manage time. Management of something connotes a sense of control. Mm. Well, I'm going to manage my diet. It means I have complete control over what I put into my mouth. We can't say the same with time. You know, I can't speed it up. I can't rewind it. I can't buy more. I can't steal more. We have exactly the same amount of time. So it's what we do with it. So the lens needs to be one of investment, time investment. You know, if you think about your time the way you think about your money, as an enormously precious, very, very limited resource that you need to invest for the greatest possible return. And that means moving away from this hustle culture, moving away from the busy culture. Mm. You know, this sense of, oh, I'm so busy. Busy doesn't mean you're productive.
No.
So it's focusing in on what are your most important tasks, what are your high value tasks, and focusing in on those. And as a small business owner, regardless of the industry, your high high value tasks are the ones which are revenue generating.
Mm.
Or cost reducing.
Mm.
And it's as simple as that. You know, you as a small business owner running a dental practice, you need to be focusing on the tasks that bring the money in.
Mm.
High value tasks are revenue generating, which means that everything else that you're potentially doing outside of your day practice at night, if that's not revenue generating type work, then you need to either deprioritize it, make it lower value, or outsource it, or reject it.
Yeah.
So, you know, busyness means we get in and we do things the same way as we did them yesterday because it's just the way we've always done it. And we allow, you know, 30 people to interrupt us over the course of the morning and we quickly scan our emails and check our phone and check the, you know, the calendar for how many patients we've got. And then we take a call from the supplier and then we jump into someone's mouth and check their teeth and then we do all of that again. A busy way of working doesn't mean you're productive. It's actually, if you're busy, it probably means you're very unproductive. So it's moving away from busy and hustle and focusing on the exact things you need to do and doing one thing at a time.
I just want to linger on this point for a second if I can, because the high value tasks I think is absolutely critical. You know, as you say, revenue generation or cost reducing, and I guess training your team around that would come into revenue generation as well, because you know they can generate revenue on your behalf basically.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to just linger on the busyness culture and the hustle culture, because it seems to still exist, although people are waking up to it. And I wanted to ask how it became so rooted in our psychology. How did it extend its tentacles into the elements of our life in such a way that it's hard to extricate yourself from that busyness? And for those people that go, I feel really busy, Kate. I feel like I'm context switching every 5 seconds. I don't feel like I can do deep work. My concentration isn't what it used to be. All of those sorts of things are comments that I'm hearing. I guess the first part is, how did we get to that point? And then secondly, how do we move away from that point?
Mm-hmm. Look, I think we got to that point because at some point, busyness became a bit of a badge of honor.
Yeah.
That you weren't the best business owner you could be, or you weren't running the best dental practice, or you weren't the best dentist and parent unless your child was in 800 after school activities, as well as you juggling your business. And I go to Bunnings on the weekend and I do this, you know, it became a bit of a badge of honor and it became very much part of our day-to-day conversations. Oh, hi, Jesse, how are you? I'm busy. Oh my God, I'm busy too. And then we talk about how busy we are and how busy our partners are or our team or our kids. And if you start to note the type of conversation you have when you talk about how busy you are, it's a really negative conversation and it really drags you down. So one of the things I'd say in terms of breaking out of that is firstly recognizing that busy doesn't mean productive. So let me reframe that conversation. Hey, Jesse, how are you? Oh, my God, I'm so unproductive. Oh, I'm so unproductive too. You know, we don't talk like that, but that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
So recognize that busy doesn't mean productive. The second way to move away from it is to simply choose to use different words to describe your working state.
Mm.
So how are you? Well, I'm good. I'm well. I'm happy. The sun's shining. Oh, I'm crap. I'm not having a great day, whatever it is, but try and remove the word busy. The third thing is that get a sense of how busy you actually are. I'm very much one in my own business and with my clients' businesses, I'm very much one that data is king. I don't want anyone to make any changes around the way they run their business until they have the data. Mm. And you need the data in terms of how busy are you. So map your time. Map a couple of days of your time from the minute you get up to the minute you go to bed. Take a note of every single time you're interrupted and every single time you switch task. And what you'll start to see is you will see pages and pages and pages of 3 to 5 minute tasks before you switch or your brain switches. That data is phenomenally powerful because firstly, it shows you you're not getting any work done. Mm. Secondly, it's going to show you what you're actually focusing on. And most of the things that you focus on when you're busy tend to be non-revenue generating. You're doing the simple, quick things, not the deep, focused thinking and not the single tasking that we need to do to get into flow. So gather the data so that you can make some different decisions.
So you've spoken about deep thinking, deep work, and I'm really interested in exploring this topic because I also feel that fulfillment is linked to that kind of work. And maybe I'm making this up because I have absolutely no evidence to base this upon. But my hypothesis is that satisfaction and fulfillment comes from doing work that matters. And the work that matters is usually that deeper work, that the stuff that is single focused rather than, you know, spraying yourself around on lots of little tasks. Do you have any data, empirical or otherwise, to link fulfillment, happiness to that kind of work at all? Because part of the things that I think about is we spoke about this post-COVID malaise or the fatigue that set in, and maybe one of the antidotes is to actually enjoy things a bit more so it doesn't feel like work. And maybe when it doesn't feel like work is because we're concentrating on something we're interested in, in that flow state you mentioned. So I'm just curious if there's any thoughts you have around that.
Yeah, look, but that sort of deep thinking, that flow, and that could equally be spending time with a patient where you're doing a complex procedure. You know, you're definitely in flow in that sort of scenario. You hopefully you are. That focus on the work that you love, that you're very good at, definitely leads to greater fulfillment and happiness. Mm. When we are quickly task shifting from one thing to another, to another, to another, and we are working at a state where our adrenaline is kicking in because we're frenetic. Mm. That is the antithesis of happy in-flow work. If you can create a state where you are focused on one thing or you're in flow for a period of time, it definitely leads to a sense of greater fulfillment, but it also leads to a sense of greater capacity. Mm. You know, I actually have the capacity to do this stuff and to focus on the most important things. Now, focus can be very different in terms of length of time for different people. You know, you've got the Pomodoro technique where they encourage you to work for like 25-minute bursts. For other people, it could be 45 minutes or 50 minutes. I can often get into flow for a couple of hours. Now, that doesn't mean everybody can, but the trick is to find out your sweet point, your sweet spot. How long can you be in flow? And it doesn't have to be what the magazines or the experts tell you. You know, work out where you can reach a point of flow and then try and batch your day to suit that. Now, obviously, a lot of your listeners are clinicians, so they're going to be on the tools, if you like. So what someone in that working environment needs to do is batch their time outside of appointment time in the way that they're batching their appointments.
Yeah.
It's like if I was working with Year 12 students, they're so used to batching their time based on length of class that it just makes sense to batch their non-class time in exactly the same way because it's already inherent. They've had 12 years of doing it that way. It's easy to continue to do it that way. So if you've got clinicians who are doing, say, 50 to 20-minute appointments or half an hour appointments, then what I would encourage them to do is when they're working on the business rather than in the business, try and batch their time in a similar way because it's something that they're already used to doing. Now, if their appointments are 15 minutes, then what I would say is do two 15-minute batches and batch them together and try and work for half an hour. But they're already used to working with that level of regimen. And that is going to help them stay in flow. Working on one thing at a time will help them stay in flow. And if you are ever in that sweet spot where you're actually genuinely in flow, which is pretty rare, to be honest, then keep working. You know, don't sort of think, oh, well, I should have a break now because, you know, Kate said to work for half an hour and then have a break. If you're genuinely in flow and you're firing, don't pull out.
No.
Stay in there.
Keep going.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting you talk about that. We have a process where we ask people to do that as well. We call it a default diary and map their non-clinical time as well. But I'm curious to ask you around energy management in that as well, because I remember in year 12, this is going back 100 years, my most energetic time, believe it or not, was about 5 p.m. And I would sit down at my desk at roughly 5 p.m. most days and do the hard stuff because for some reason I was kind of going really well at that particular time. So where does energy management come into this, knowing your natural rhythms, knowing your kind of energy peaks and troughs?
Yeah, it's critical. So the concept of batching is grouping like tasks together so that you can create a sense of flow much more easily. It also means that you're not coming in and out of tasks really quickly, and that quick task switching depletes our productivity by 40%.
Wow.
So we're trying to batch similar tasks together into a chunk of time so that we're not coming in and out of tasks. So, for example, from a revenue-generating perspective, you may want to batch in, or you might have a team member who batches in phoning dormant customers. So we may have a list of customers that haven't reached out to us for 12 months. Rather than ringing one at 9 and then another at 3 when you get 10 minutes and another on Tuesday at 4 when you get 5 minutes, you batch in 45 minutes to ring 10 dormant customers a week. So that's the concept of batching it together. So in terms of energy, we also want to batch out energy. Now, you need to be aware of when you're at your best. And then you need to build a 6-foot-high bulletproof fence around that time, because that's your best time. You want to do your highest value tasks during your best energy time. So your most complex procedures, your business strategy for the next 12 months, your decisions about what you're doing with your staff, your own professional development, process efficiencies to strip costs out of the business, they're the sorts of tasks you want to do when you are enthusiastically and energetically at your best. You need to know when that is. Now, people will sort of generally know, well, I'm a morning person or an afternoon person. That's when you want to batch your high-value tasks. But it's also worth just monitoring it for a week or two and sort of just making a note of when you get a little bit of burst of energy. When I did this, I was really surprised that I used to think that I wasn't a morning person, but now after spending a lot of time working on this stuff, I know for sure that I'm definitely a morning person. I batch in all my high value stuff into the morning. By lunchtime, I'm literally in a coma because I've done all my hard work. Then I eat, which, you know, it sends me into an even deeper coma. I get a burst of energy at about 3:30 p.m. for an hour.
Yeah.
And I only know that because I've mapped it. If I wasn't paying attention to it, I would probably be feeling tired after lunch, and then all of a sudden maybe I feel a little bit better, so I might put the washing out and go for a walk. But now I can look at that time and say, I have a real energy burst, and I'm going to slot in another high-value task at 3:30 p.m.
Yeah.
And the flip side of this is really important. If you're the morning person and you're batching out your high-value tasks in the morning, you don't want to try and force yourself to do additional high-value tasks in the afternoon or in the early evening, because your brain is slush. So your error rate increases, the amount of time it takes you to complete the work increases. So you need to be very aware of what your low or lower value tasks are. So the tasks that you still need to do, you can't outsource them or reject them or push them to your team because your team are already busy doing all of their stuff. So there are always going to be a bundle of tasks that you have to do that aren't revenue generating and aren't cost reducing. They just have to be done. You want to do them in the afternoon if you're a morning person, because that's when you want to do your process driven, easy stuff that you can do with your eyes closed because you're virtually in a coma.
I think that's really, really valuable. And it's really interesting. I never thought I always thought of myself as a night owl. It's like, oh yeah, I like to go to bed late and get up late and all that sort of stuff. And I realised, like you, I'm actually quite the opposite. I actually do really well when I get to bed early and I get up early, and then I get a lot of my heavy lifting done before people are even in the office, and I feel like I've had that little bit of time for me to do the stuff that I really appreciate and value and moves the needle for us. You spoke about error rates increasing, and I will change gear in a second to another topic that's on my mind, but I wanted to talk about the concept of overwork for a second because I think that there's a lot of people in this world who are probably overworking. Maybe they're working long hours, not productive, the error rate's increasing. But again, maybe this stems back to the busyness and the hustle stuff. But do you see that as an issue, or am I just having a limited view of the world where I'm seeing people just working, you know, crazy hours but not on the high-value things and, as you say, the error rates? And is it the stuff that they're just not delegating, or is it things are penetrating that 6-foot high fence, or where do people come unstuck with this concept?
I think that there's a number of answers to that, but most particularly what I'd say with small business owners is that we just often wear too many hats, and it's this sense of not letting go. When I work with my clients, what I do is we segment their time into four different categories: the things that they must do, the things they want to do, the things they could potentially delegate or outsource, and the things that they can reject. Now, musts for any of us are our high-value tasks that are at our skill level, that are revenue-generating or cost-reducing. They're also expertise-led. So if you're a dentist in a rural practice or regional area and you're the only dentist within 800 kilometres and someone comes in and they need a root canal today and they're in agony and you're one of five dentists, but you're the only one who's ever done a root canal, that's a must for you because you're the only one who's ever done it. Now, you're probably going to bring in two or three or four of the other dentists to show them how it's done so that next time someone comes in, there's two of you that could do it. But in that instance, that's a must. Now, that narrows the field of musts because if you're in a suburban practice or a city practice and there's eight dentists and someone comes in and needs a root canal, that's not a must for you. So we need to look at our musts through a really tight lens. They've got to be high value, at our skill level, revenue generating or cost reducing. Wants are the nice things. Go for a jog, go for a walk, have a sleep in, have a swim, hang out with your partner, play with the kids. If you were to get your dentist, your listeners to map their time today or tomorrow, you're going to see very few wants because they're really busy, caught up in what they think are the musts. The way to deplete your list of musts is to look at what you can potentially outsource or delegate and what you can potentially reject. Now, the delegation category falls into three different sub-definitions. There's delegation 101 where, you know, if you're the dentist, then you're going to delegate appointments and greeting patients and taking payments to the receptionist. It's just delegate that task to someone else. If you're the senior dentist, you will delegate some of the more routine procedures to a junior dentist. So just classic delegation. Then there's outsourcing, where you identify everything that you currently do in the business that you're prepared to pay an expert to do because they will do it faster, better, and cheaper than you. So you may delegate out or outsource out your IT system. You might outsource out your bookkeeping and your accounting, your legal fees, your marketing, your social media, having a coach, all examples of outsourcing. On the home front, you may outsource the cleaning to get a cleaner because they're going to do it faster, better and cheaper than you. And they're an expert. The third type is insourcing. This is for any of your listeners who live with other people, children, partners, flatmates. Insourcing is where you identify everything you currently do for the people you live with that they can do for themselves that you don't have to pay them for. Clean up your wardrobe, make your bed, unpack the dishwasher, pack the dishwasher, walk the cat, kick the dog, paint the fence.
Yeah, you're speaking my love language there. I've got two teenagers, so one 20-year-old, one 18-year-old. So, oh, my God.
Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah, totally.
Then the fourth category is rejects. This tends to not so much be tasks but behaviours. So we want to delegate the tasks, we want to reject the behaviours. So we may have a behaviour that we check the receptionist's calendar for appointments every day just to see that we've got 8, not 10. We may have a behaviour that we jump onto social media between every single appointment and scroll mindlessly. We may have a behaviour that we shop on the way home from work every single night to pick up just what I need for dinner tonight. And those behaviours are costing us time, they're costing us money. So we need to reject the behaviours that are costing us. Now, how do we know what a must, wants, delegates and rejects? Well, you map your time. So like I said before, you map your time to within an inch of its life, and then against every single entry, you decide, is that a must or want, something I could delegate or something I can reject?
Yeah, okay, I love that. Thank you for going through that process. Ladies and gents, if you've just tuned in, please just rewind 90 seconds or 2 minutes and just play that section over and over and over again, because I think there's some real value in there to go through that exercise. Kate, one of the things that I'd probably like to just get some clarity about is when people follow this process that you've articulated and that they're looking to free up some time in their life, how much time will they typically free up? I know there's a whole probably range of answers to that, but just ballpark. I'm also curious to ask you about what to do with that time, because one of the things I've fallen foul with is I free up time and then I'm twiddling my thumbs and old habits creep in and I go back to where I came from. Mm-hmm. And I'm mindful of the book that you wrote called The Life List, and I wanted to just kind of explore that as well.
Yeah. So, look, in terms of how much time people get back, I guarantee my clients that they will get back 30 hours of lost time a month.
Wow. That's a day. That's basically a day a week, like 8 hours a day. A work day a week.
Yeah, well, but what I see repeatedly is clients getting way more than that. So 30 hours sounds amazing, but it's an easy promise for me to make, because once my clients do this process, they're getting back 90, 100. I had a client the other day go back 140 hours.
Oh, my God.
Now, that's an on-paper exercise. You then have to actually make the changes. You have to delegate the work, and there's a process where you learn how to delegate properly. You've got to find the cleaner. You've got to train the staff. But all of those are time investments that are going to reap heaps of benefits down the track. You know, systemize, spend time building the process, spend time getting the knowledge out of your brain and onto paper so that staff stop coming and asking you all the questions like you're the oracle. You know, so you have to invest time to create the time down the track. In terms of once you've got that time back, well, it's that beautiful segue into, well, what am I going to do with those 30 plus hours of lost time a month? And this is where, you know, the life list comes in. I wrote the book, it got published last April, so 18 months ago, and I wrote it during COVID, the first year of COVID, 2020. My ex-husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Oh, no.
And that was the April 2020, and within 11 months he had passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. He was only 54, and he left behind our three very young adult children. They were teenagers, early 20s, and it just left me with this, you know, I'm this time management expert, and all of a sudden it was this huge wake-up call for me in terms of, well, how am I actually living my life? Am I genuinely happy with how I'm living my life? And there was this COVID overlay, which gave everybody a big opportunity to rethink how they want to live and work. And I sort of came out of it with this resolution, or this, I guess, you know, it's trite, but once you're sort of faced with that sort of trauma, it led me to this sort of whole process of thinking, you know, life is too short. I genuinely know this. Later could be too late. And so I sort of reversed the concept of a bucket list. You know, a bucket list is, what do I want to do before I die? And I don't want to leave it that long. So a life list is, what do I want to do right now while I'm still young enough to live it and love it and enjoy it? So it's all about identifying what is most important to you right now across sort of seven concepts, you know, health and well-being, wealth, relationships, adventure. And it's about sort of filling your cup in each of those spaces and saying, well, I don't want to work every hour that God gave me anymore. You know, I want to have better balance in my life so that I can focus on the people I love, focus on the things I love, and create experiences that are going to make a difference in my and other people's lives. And so with those 30 hours, you know, what I'd be saying, Jesse, is at some points of time, it will be necessary to put those 30 hours back into your business if you're in a growth stage. But in other points of time, it's really, really necessary to put those 30 hours into yourself, into your family, into the things that you love outside your business.
We spoke last 8 years ago on this podcast, and we were both 8 years younger than we are now. And
Speak for yourself, Jesse.
Yeah, well, you still look amazing, but, you know, you're fine. I've got a few more grey hairs than I had back then. But the question I wanted to ask you is around changing perspectives or changing priorities as we age.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is not necessarily strictly on topic, but it's something that I've been thinking about a lot as I'm aging. Don't think I'm old, far from it. I'm only 53. But the point I'm noticing in myself is what was important to me 8 years ago is different to what's important to me now, and just kind of how this changes through the seasonality of life. I just wondered if you had any thoughts or perspectives on that.
I do, and I think it's very, very, very much on topic, to be honest, because we've talked about time investment and investing your time for the greatest impact. In terms of that time investment, when you think to yourself, well, where and how do I invest that in terms of what's most important to me, that becomes a question of what is it that I most value. Not a question of what are my values. You know, your values tend to be reasonably static throughout your lifetime, and it might be, you know, hardworking and success and financial security and whatever your values are, they tend to remain reasonably static. When it comes to where do you want to spend your time, the question isn't what are my values, the question is what do I most value?
Mm.
And in working out what I most value, that is going to allow you to work out where you want to invest your time. And that will change depending on the seasonality of life, as you've beautifully described it. You know, 8 years ago, what I most valued was very, very different to what I value now. 8 years ago, I was still married.
Mm.
I had 3 children in high school. I was floating along very happily thinking that everything was great. My kids were going to finish high school and then my partner and I would travel the world, and I was investing a hell of a lot of time in my business. You know, fast forward 2 years, my partner left me, and my values changed overnight in terms of what I most value. All of a sudden it was 100% looking out for my kids, helping them through that terrible period of time, focusing on my business so that I could sustain my income.
Mm.
Fast forward 2 years, we're plunged into COVID, which uprooted everybody. Then my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. My values changed again.
Mm.
That was one of coming back and trying to and successfully reforging a relationship and a friendship with him, not a marriage because we were separated, but forgiving him. Moving into a place where I could support him and our children through his diagnosis, supporting my children through his death, and coming out the other side and thinking, I don't want to work.
Mm.
Well, I don't want to work all the time. I want to do things really differently. Life's too short. And so now there are 3 things I value: my family, my kids, my partner, my business, and my health and well-being.
Mm.
And I create my whole life around those: my week, my month, my year. My calendar, my life list is focused on my kids, my family, my business, and my health and well-being. And the pendulum as to which gets the most attention depends on who needs me the most at any given time. Is it my kids? Is it my business? Is it myself? But I've got rid of all the white noise.
Mm.
I'm very, very, very good at saying no these days, because what I most value has changed. Talking about that process of aging and your children, if you have them, aging and priorities changing, absolutely what you want to invest your time in is going to change as you age.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I just had noticed myself that, things were shifting internally for me, and I had felt a sense of, well, not disquiet about it because you recognize the change and you understand why it's changing. But at the same time, it's also like things you held so dearly once before, you suddenly kind of go, ah. You know, it's quite an interesting thing to jettison some tightly held things, you know, from previous times.
Absolutely. And if you think back to, for example, say you're a business owner and you may be married or not, or you may have a partner or not, but you don't have children and you're just 100% focused on your business. And then if you then had children, remember how your values changed overnight. You know, you went from that place of 180% being focused on your business to 100 1,000% being focused on that beautiful little baby.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen overnight.
Yeah.
So think about the times in the past when it's happened, and it's just normal and it's natural and it's lovely. And I'm seeing it a lot more for two reasons. Firstly, I'm seeing it because I guess I'm more focused on it because of the life list and my intention to live very differently and having conversations with people about it. That's the first reason I'm sort of seeing it more. But the second reason, without question, is people have come out of COVID and they just want to do life differently. They don't want to be working as hard. People are tired. People are burnt out. People are frustrated. But they're also, they have greater perspective. They have this sense now that it's not just all about the business.
Mm. I think that there's so much wisdom there, and this comes back to the life by design. And I think what I really appreciate what you shared is the three pillars that you're focused on, whether it's family, business, or your health and well-being. I think those are three really valuable pillars that I think most of us could probably relate to. And the way you've allocated your time accordingly, depending on the need of the hour, I think is really valuable as well. Kate, I'm curious to ask, with the book, The Life List, because I'm sure there'll be someone saying, how do I get a copy of The Life List? Where is it available, and how can people grab a copy of it?
Yeah, so look, it's on Amazon. It used to be on Booktopia, but I think they're folded.
Oh, no, isn't it sad?
I know. It's devastating, actually. It's in all good bookstores. If you've got a beautiful local indie bookstore, you can always go and ask them to get it in for you. If you want a signed copy, send me an email and I can just invoice you. I don't sell them online, but I do have people reach out for me wanting signed copies. But in terms of quick snapping it up, Amazon's probably your best bet.
Kate, just as we round out the conversation today, I guess what I'd really like to ask you is for your perspective or your thoughts or even your insights or guidance, advice, anything of that nature, the gospel, according to Kate, as it stands with living a life by design, because I think the intentionality piece around this is really important. And you've obviously been very intentional how you've reconfigured your life over the last few years. And I know that you do that work with your clients as well. So for people wanting to live a life on purpose and intentionally and by design, what would be one or two things that you want to leave the listeners with today?
Yeah, great. So look, the first thing I'd say is it's a permission piece. And it's a personal permission piece. I think that so often when we're looking to live life differently or set different goals, we have that moment of inspiration, but the very next thing that sort of jumps in is our brain tells us all the reasons why we can't.
Mm.
You know, you might fail. You don't have enough time. You don't have enough money. You know, what will your family say? What will your partner say? What will your kids say? You know, what will your business partner say? And so we shelve those ideas because we don't want to rock the boat. You know, in terms of the life list and living a life by design, it very much is a personal permission piece where you just sit down and say, hey, it's my turn. You know, I'm 54, so I'm pretty much the same age as you. And I've worked my ass off forever. And I've raised three incredible children. And, you know, they're all in their early 20s. It's my turn. It's my turn. And it's as simple as that. So it's a self-permission piece. And the first thing I'd say is it's okay to do this and do some thinking about what you as an individual want. For sure, you can create a partner life list and you can create a family life list, but start with your own personal life list. What do you want to do, Jesse? You know, do you want to go hike the Larapinta for 6 days on your own? You know, do you want to go plant a million trees? Do you want to start swimming every day? It's what do you want to do for you is the first thing I'd say.
Mm.
The second thing is with your life list, and it's probably closely linked to that, it's your life list is about you. So go back to that values exercise. What do I most value? And build your life list around that. In terms of, I think intuitively, we mostly know what it is we most value. But three questions you can ask yourself to flush that out pretty quickly. The first is, if I was really, really sick, what or who would I get out of bed for?
Mm.
And you write down a big long list of, or a short list,
yes,
of what you'd get out of bed for. The second question is, when I'm with my besties, the people who I just love talking to, what do I love talking about? And write down a list of those things. And then the third question is, if you think about that person in your life that you really, really admire, if that person was to compliment you, what would you love them to say about you?
Oh, wow.
And then you write down a list of those. Then you've got to put a circle around any answer that came up to each question. And that's going to be a pretty strong indicator for you as to what it is you most value. And when I do that exercise, you know, there's lots and lots of things I'll get out of bed for, and there's lots of things I would love to be complimented on, and there's lots of things I talk to my friends about. But where the answer comes up three times, it's my kids. I'll talk about them. I will get out of bed for them. And the person I admire most is my dad. And when he says, "Katie, you're an amazing mum," you know, that's nectar for my soul. My business answers all three questions, and my health and well-being answers all three questions. There's other bits and bobs on there that I love, but they're not the hardcore three. Now, you might have five or eight or two, but if you answer those three questions, that's going to give you a pretty good sense about what it is you most value. That's what you have to build your life list around.
Really powerful. Really powerful. Great questions. Thought I'm just doing a bit of a mental checklist as we're speaking. So the pause, ladies and gents, is me kind of going through that exercise mentally right now.
And you should see Jesse's face, everyone. He's got the thinking face on.
I know. I was at a workshop a little while ago, Kate. I have to tell you this, and I won't mention the name of the trainer. She's really lovely. She's really nice. She was talking about something, and I was thinking, and she goes, "Jesse, you've got resting bitch face." And
This is Jesse thinking face.
I'm not cranky. I'm just processing. So if this video goes out and people think I'm cranky, no, I'm just processing.
No, okay. I can assure you, Jesse is thinking.
Hey, Kate. Thank you so much for coming on to our program today. And let's not leave it another 8 years before we get you back.
I know, and 8 years and a pandemic.
Oh, please, no more pandemics. I think we can all kind of hope for that. But I really appreciate your insights, and I really appreciate your wisdom, and I really appreciate the thought-provoking questions and challenging people to live their life intentionally and by design. Again, ladies and gents, grab a copy of the book, The Life List, from Amazon or your local bookstore, and I think it'll be a really good guide to help you get more from life in a way that's meaningful and fulfilling. So, Kate, you're a gem. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.